Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. My name is Ken Edwards. I am with the Midwest Coalition of Labor. Sitting to my left is Ed Maher with the International Union of Operating Engineers. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. What's happening?
My voice is kind of messed up because we were at the picket, which we're going to be talking.
The
Writers Guild strike, the Writers Guild picket. We're going to be talking about that, but my voice is shot from that, just absolutely shot. So I apologize in advance. But before we start, I have to give a shout out to my lovely fiance. It was her birthday, and her name is
Alice?
No, it's Rachel. Sorry, I forgot. Rachel. Sorry. Shout out to Rachel. And you know, I know we just lost half our female audience because they just found out I'm engaged. So
yeah,
I'm sorry, ladies.
Well, that's why you were holding out for so long.
You want to give a shout out to anybody special, Ed? I think you should.
Yeah. Well, I will second the happy birthday to Rachel.
Thank you.
I also want to say hello to my special woman at home, and that is Claire.
She's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really like her a
lot. Ladies, we love you.
Yeah.
So big week. We had a big week.
Huge week, right? So writers strike. Writers are on strike. And you've been reading about it. We've been talking about it. Of course, we're the first people out of the box talking about it because, you know, we're the Workers' Mic. We're the number one radio show in America. But, you know, so it made its way to Chicago.
Right.
And it was organic.
And it, you know, the thing about it, we'll get into this way in detail, was it became more than just a group of writers out there.
And it was fantastic. And quite frankly, it was unique because Chicago really is a union town.
That's right.
And I've talked to my friends in L.A., I've talked to my friends in New York, all of whom are in writers' guilds and some of the entertainment industry, and they didn't have the same turnout that we had. They had a different picket.
The event on Wednesday, this past Wednesday downtown, was the largest event that the Writers Guild has had so far since its strike began.
Can you imagine that? And it's here in Chicago, and there's no office in Chicago.
Right.
So it happened like this, is my understanding. The writers said, hey, we're going to picket. And they picketed NBC, or
they picketed
outside of NBC's building on a little plaza there. And by the way, it made the news. It was all over the news, except I didn't see it on NBC. Did you?
No, I think they were covering a cat dog or cat fashion show or something like that.
It is amazing that, like, literally, it's happening right outside the building. There's 1,000 people there. There's a bunch of Scabby the Rats and a Fight Back Fund and all this Fight Back Bus and, like, you know, the whole thing, and they don't cover it.
Right.
So, a couple of things. One is, you know, these writers said they want to, you know, go out and picket. And so, my understanding is they then called SAG-AFTRA, and I got to give it up to SAG-AFTRA. They turned out their members like nobody's business.
And that's the Screen Actors Guild.
Screen Actors
Eric
Guild.
Chadron.
And Eric Chadron, fantastic, fantastic guy. And the American Federation of Television and Radio
Actors,
I think. Is that what it is?
Sure. Association.
Sure. You should,
America?
We should know this because we're trying to get cards for that union.
Right.
Well, we'll get the acronym right one day.
The A usually stands for America.
I don't think that's accurate. We'll figure that out. So, anyway, then I talked to Eric, and then, you know, and some of them say, and Eric from the SAG-AFTRA, I should say, and they're like, look, we don't necessarily do this very often.
Right.
Right? Like,
you know who does?
Yeah.
Who? The building trades.
Oh,
absolutely.
Every day. That's what we do. This is our wheelhouse. So right. I call you, and we start making a bunch of calls, and we call the MCL unions, who turn out in absolute force.
Well,
force.
I'll say this. Before all of that happened, the three young men that film our show for YouTube, they're film students. They had been given the day off by their professor to come out to this event.
Oh, no way.
They told me about it last week, and that's what started the conversation about.
I did not know
Let's get some rats, let's get some people, and let's go check this out, do a remote segment, get some interviews, which we'll play for you later in the show. But hats off to these guys.
Yeah, good for you guys.
From Da Vinci Street Productions.
And soon to be union members, by the way.
That's right. You made a lot of friends out there.
Certainly did. And so, and by the way, we're going to post a pretty lengthy video about the strike. And everybody that was there, and really what it looked like, because what you saw, the little snippets on the news, it wasn't really indicative.
It didn't capture the range of different people from different backgrounds that all came out for the same thing.
Correct. Now, we're going to need to take a quick break, but I want to just say this. I have also found a way to resolve the strike.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell it, but I'm going to save it to the end of the show, so you have to listen to the end of the show. You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. I've actually figured out a way to resolve the strike. It's free advice from Ken Edwards. So we need to take a quick break, and then we will be back right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Ken Edwards, and we're talking a little bit about the writer's strike. Again, something that we've talked a little bit about for the past month or so, and after this week's event, we have a lot to report on. Wednesday, we alluded to in the first segment.
Yeah, Wednesday was an amazing, amazing day.
And, big rally.
And you know, before we even go on, I got to give a shout out. You know, the operators were there in full force. The laborers, the electricians, the carpenters, 399. I mean, they were there. They turned it out.
Right.
I mean, it was absolutely fantastic to watch. I saw flight attendants there.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of teachers, not many.
Right.
But, you know, obviously they're teaching school.
Right.
But, you know, we even had, you know, a bunch of WGN staff were out there, you know, because it was their lunch hour and they have a First Amendment right to do that, by the way. But
yeah.
that was nice, right?
Absolutely.
And they saw sheet metal workers.
Yeah,
and
carpenters. I mean, I don't want to leave anybody out.
I'm trying not to leave anybody out. The Chicago Federation of Labor was
right.
out there.
Did a great job.
You know, and obviously SAG just crushed it. I mean, Eric, I guess he's a business manager, if you will, said that more people turned out for the picket than he's had at his largest union meeting.
Well,
and that's pretty cool, right? And you know, they're up next, by the way.
Well, when yeah. when it began, again, as you said earlier, the Writers Guild doesn't have a lot of these events
yeah.
and doesn't have a ton of experience with them. So things like inflatable rats,
right.
they don't have those.
So I had the pleasure of meeting Lily Wachowski.
Right.
One of the writers of
all the Matrix movies, V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta is badass. I thought it was better than The Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the people who had the idea behind The Matrix. Talk about being ahead of your time with this
whole... Oh, my gosh, you know. Absolutely. It's seen into the future.
Yeah.
And so she was out there, and she gave, I think, an interview on WGN and, mm-hmm. and whatever. But, like, it turns out we live in the same neighborhood, and that's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And this is somebody that's probably a multi-millionaire. And so there were people that were out there, you know, famous actors and, you know, sort of a lot of TV shows
right.
and things like that. So Bobcat Goldthwait was there.
Yeah, right? Bobcat.
He killed it.
He gave a great speech.
So did you, by the way. You gave a fantastic speech.
Well, thank you,
I'm
Ken.
Serious. You gave a really, really good speech. I'm not saying that because you're sitting next to him. You really gave a good speech.
Well, thank you.
And by the way, where was our mayor? Where's our union mayor, right? It's his second day in office. The guy literally works four blocks from where the picket is. Where was he?
I didn't see him out there.
I didn't see him out there either.
Right.
I saw a couple of aldermen. My alderman was there.
There were a handful of aldermen. Yeah, there were a handful of aldermen.
Where's our union mayor? Come on, dude. Like, hey, Brandon, like, literally, this is lowest of low-hanging fruit. How many times has there been a picket in your backyard in the city of Chicago of such importance? Why not show up?
Well...
Without like, and he tweeted something like, you know, like, oh, I'm in favor of the strike, whatever.
It's his first week. I don't know what his schedule
right.
looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, his schedule. He must be very, very busy to not
right.
be able to show up to something
but
like that.
The, you know, Bobcat made a good point, and I think this hammers home, is everybody figures that if you're working in Hollywood on shows that make a lot of money, you're making a ton of money. You're well off.
And that's not true.
And we've talked before on this yeah. show about, you know, the person who writes Stranger Things makes the same amount of money as the person who writes some show that you'll never even hear of.
Right.
And Bobcat got up there and talked about friends of his who work on award-winning shows but cannot afford to eat. Like, don't eat well because they can't afford food.
And they feel like they... I think there's a piece of this where the writers feel guilty about asking for money because this is something that they wanted to do their entire lives.
Right.
It's like, hey, I play music, and I'm all of a sudden I'm going to monetize that. Well, guess what? You should monetize it
right.
because without the writers, there is literally nothing... Nothing happens
yeah.
after that, right? Without them literally writing... The script, the idea, the dialogue, etc. That's where it starts.
Mm-hmm.
They have the idea. And without them, there literally is no television or film industry.
Right.
And they don't realize how important they are and what kind of power they have. And I think over the years, they've let that get chipped away.
Yeah. And when we got there in the morning, one of the picket captains for the Writers Guild asked me, why do construction workers care about this? Like, thank you so much for coming, but why do you care? And, I mean, many reasons. First off, a struggle for one worker is a struggle for all workers.
Absolutely.
We believe in solidarity, and I think that was something that the writers in Chicago didn't know about, didn't know that the union movement was so supportive here. And, you know, I think that a lot of connections were made out there because these folks are just fighting to have enough money to afford an apartment and three meals a day, and that's not a lot to ask.
The guy that writes, you know, something for Netflix makes less money and lives in horrible conditions versus our guy that's, you know, running a skid steer on a job site.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it's a shame.
Or if you get paid, you know, $1,000 to write on a show, and that show blows up
right.
and becomes a huge thing, selling merchandise, you know, winning awards.
What do you get?
Nothing.
Zero.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
who's inventing something and saying, you can have it.
Yeah.
That has value, crazy value. So we did a bunch of interviews.
Right.
And you want to just like talk, like run through and see if we can get some of the stuff.
Yeah, let's get a couple of clips.
Let's start with a clip from the actual picket captains for the writers. Let's get down to it. All right. Why are you guys on strike?
Fair wages, basically. A lot of things being written for free. Lots of rooms being understaffed. Showrunners running way too many jobs. Just trying to keep our heads above water. And a lot of people with families. People need to pay rent. People need to get food. They're not making a wage, and the studios are making a bunch of money and not giving us our fair amount.
You guys, I think, have some unique issues, and I want to get to it, right?
Yeah. They've turned writing for the screen into a gig economy, really, and particularly with television. Television as a used to be, you know, a 24, 26 episode kind of thing. You work maybe 8 months out of the year, and now...
And it's a writer's room. There was a writer's room. Bunch of people.
Right, with a mentorship program in which you learn how to run it.
Like an apprentice in the building trades.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. But now, episodes, as you've seen on streaming services, maybe 6, 8, 10 episodes. People write maybe one episode to get paid for that one episode, and then they're put on hold for the rest of the year to see if they're going to get the show gets picked up again.
And then how does that affect their pension and their health insurance and their benefits?
Yeah, I mean, in a really huge way.
Yeah.
Because they don't get enough hours to qualify.
Right.
So
it's just like something in the building trades. If we were to say, you know, we usually have quarterly or banked hours. If we don't have enough hours, we don't get health insurance. It's the same way with the writers, correct?
That's exactly right, which is why you've seen Emmy winning writers trying to find a second job and something else.
So you don't get residuals or anything like that?
Residuals, the idea of residuals is the good year pays for the bad years, you know? And when it comes to streaming services like Netflix, no. You get a flat fee buyout, and then they're free to play.
So is that something that you have on the table right now that you guys are trying to change?
It was on the table back in 2008, I think, right? And it's on the table now.
Yep.
And this is really one of the big...
And let's get to this, because I've said this, we've talked about this, AI, right? My understanding is that the Writers Guild has brought up AI at the bargaining table, and what's the scariest thing, I think, that I've heard so far is that the studios refuse to even discuss it.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, me and, you know, Brett and I have been talking about AI, and in the beginning, like, I thought it was kind of a boutique issue. It was something that, at one of the meetings, somebody brought up, kind of offhandedly, and they're like, oh yeah, we're on top of that. And once the studios refused to even talk about it, it suddenly became very clear to everyone that it's the issue. Yeah. One of the, you know, the issue.
So it's like, they're like, hey, everybody, look over here. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about benefits. But the real issue is potentially the loss of jobs for human beings.
Well, that's true. And also just the amount that they can pay for a script. Because they can get a book from public domain.
Right.
Put it through the AI machine or whatever, hand it to you and say, hey, can you do a touch-up on this? We love your voice. Do a little touch-up on that. And the amount they pay for that, as opposed to like an original script or an adapted script, is much less.
So have you guys thought about copyright issues, right?
Oh, that too, yeah. Certainly for the work. I mean, you plug Michael Gillio, you plug his name into the AI and they say, hey, write me one of his scripts like that. That's his work already that they're using to write something else.
Yeah. And I also want to say, I don't want to exaggerate the you know, I've read about this, which is like, you know, not all technology, there's no evidence that AI can do all of this just yet, you know?
I think that this is a race to the bottom. What do you guys think?
I completely agree. It's a race to the bottom. And that's all of this stuff is exactly what we're fighting against, is that race to the bottom in all sorts of ways. There's nothing that they're giving us or asking us to take that isn't a race to the bottom. They're asking us to just to serve them. And you know what this is about. It's like, do the work. We'll see if we pay you enough for it, and we'll see if you have a job later. And all of this is all wrapped up in
it. It's scary, and I'll tell you, you know, you usually think about strikes, right? You see strikes all the time in Chicago, construction. This is a white-collar strike, right? You don't see a lot of white-collar strikes. You think of writers, especially somebody that wrote Dungeons and Dragons, you think that you're, you know, the super rich guy living in a, you know, giant house or whatever, and that's not the case.
No, it's not the case, and particularly with young writers trying to get a start in this business, it is very, very hard right now.
I mean, let's put it this way. If you're a young writer out there right now and you want to do this for a living and you're watching what's going on, this race to the bottom, you might turn around and say, well, why would I want to be a writer? I can't make a living. I'm going to have to drive Uber as well. I'm going to go do something else. And then we're going to have a brain drain. We're going to lose talent, right? And all of a sudden the products are going to go down. But let's get to this. They take your money away. You know, they're trying to just destroy the middle class. There's going to be nobody left to actually subscribe to Netflix to watch the movies.
That's very true.
It is the most, it's the most ridiculous, implosive concept. But
it's short-term thinking.
It's short-term corporate greed.
Look what corporate greed did to the music industry, it did to retail. They have no interest in long-term planning. And
just squeeze as much as you can right now.
As of yesterday, they lost as much money right now as we're asking for.
Yeah.
So they've already hemorrhaging money.
Yep.
Why is that? How is that?
Because for example, like yesterday, we closed down one of the shows, the Shy on Showtime. We closed down filming for that show. They're done for the season. They halted production, and they lose money on that for everybody they pay.
So the amount of money that they lost already it surpassed the amount of money that you guys are asking for.
As of today.
But they have deep pockets, and do they think that they're going to starve you out?
Yes,
they do.
Yes.
Well, they're already starving. You know, they can't starve. They can't, as you know, you can't starve a starved person.
Yeah,
we'll be here because we're hungry. We want fair. That's what we want. We only want to be in the conversation. We want to be good collaborators, like we want to be, and we want to be paid a fair living wage.
All right, so that was a cool interview, and that was you, Ken, with Writers Guild strike captains Michael Gillio and Brett Nouveau. I also interviewed a professor, actually, from DePaul, who wrote one of the American Pie movies and happens to be the professor for the folks who film our show here.
What's his name?
His name is Brad Riddell.
Let's hear from him.
Film and television is a business like any other, and so we understand profits have to be made. But the laborers, the people who are creating it, should... I mean, we're talking about art as well, right? And the people who are creating it are artists, we're telling stories, and, you know, we're human, right? And I think AI can be a tool. You know, you can certainly use it for research. There's all kinds of ways that it can be useful, but... the intention, I think, is to generate story with the machine and then hand it off to a writer to polish it up for a much less wage.
Right.
And we feel like that's taking away the agency of the creator.
And cutting writers out by the use of these mini rooms, it really cuts out the pipeline for writers to step up and become producers and showrunners and learn the business. So isn't it just aren't these production companies just kind of shooting themselves in the foot and destroying the workforce development that they rely on?
Exactly. Over the decades that television has been rising to what we call peak TV now, writers have been sitting in rooms together with a showrunner, breaking stories, developing characters, doing all the work to create the shows we love. And now the idea is like, hey, let's sit and get them together for a week, you know, see what ideas they have, and then let the showrunner write the rest of them. And so what we're saying is, you're denying younger, more diverse writers oftentimes the chance to grow up in a room and learn how the business works, to learn from their fellow writers, and to develop into future showrunners. That's being taken away from us right now, and I don't think it's going to serve the public or the industry.
I got to give him a lot of credit, and credit to the DePaul Film School, because they released a lot of their students from class to come out and get involved.
And they showed up, and that was great.
Right on.
And I interviewed two guys at once, BJ Levy from the Musicians Union and John Coley Jr. from the Teamsters. I interviewed them together. Let's hear what they had to say. All right, so let me ask you guys a question. Why are you here?
Well, to support the writers. It's automation and the gig economy are ruining great work for everybody, and the writers are just one of the newest labor forces to be subject to this kind of
this race to the bottom.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Musicians have been dealing with it for years, and we've had photographers. We have all kinds of people that are suffering from automation in the gig economy.
I don't know if anybody actually has the answer, but what do we do about this?
We march around. I mean, we strike when the contract comes up. We demand that human beings get the labor that's due to them. And not only that, but we rehumanize this work. We have to make sure that people know there are writers that are creating the products that they love so much. There are musicians creating the products that they stream for free. There are people behind this work.
You know, I think the answer is the same as it was 100 years ago, and that's get off our butts and organize.
All right, we're going to wrap this segment up. There's a ton more out there, a ton more interviews. We're probably going to be talking about this for a few weeks, obviously, because I think this is going to go on for some time. But if you want to see everything, and I mean everything, keep an eye on our YouTube channel, because the guys from Da Vinci Street are going to post everything that they filmed, and they filmed a ton of stuff and right. a ton of interviews and some really, really interesting things. With that, we will be right back on the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ken. This is Ed. We are very happy to have Doug Klima here with us. Doug, and I apologize for my voice. I'm shot from
He's getting
weekend.
A little choked up.
I'm so happy to have you here. I'm crying.
It's a little emotional here at the Workers' Mic.
Doug, who are you and what do you do?
I'm one of the managing directors at Megan Financial, and I am one of the retirement consultants and financial advisors there.
How long have you been there?
16 years.
Holy cow, that's a long time.
Yes.
And let's drill down for a second. Tell us, like, you said something off air that I thought was funny, in that you said that you were the Swiss Army knife of Megan.
Yes, that's correct.
So like the utility player.
Yes, kind of. Yeah, exactly. The utility player. I do
whatever. If you have a problem you can't figure out or that you really don't feel like doing, you call Doug.
That's right. And even if I don't want to do it, I'm still doing it.
Right on.
Because you have to.
I have no choice.
That's right. You're not the owner of Megan Financial.
That's correct.
Not yet.
No.
All right. So let's talk about some of the benefits and the things that you provide to union members. And then what I thought was interesting as well, and we're going to get to this, is non-union members that are related to union members.
Yes, kind of. So what we... as financial advisors want to get across it, and as retirement consultants, is when we see union members, because we are very union-centric.
Right, yes.
We help a lot of unions in the Chicagoland area. We help them retire. We help them figure out their benefits. We do a lot of education. So the education that we provide to union members is they go to work, they pay dues, and then, Ed, we were saying this just a second ago, is they know their benefits, but they don't know their benefits.
Right.
So there's certain things that they do need to inquire about because they're important. Being a union member, they all have pensions. Most all have pensions. They all have monthly pensions when they retire, and also annuities, defined contribution plans. That's kind of the known. Health insurance is huge.
Right. Sure.
Life insurance as well. We do get questions about that. How much is it? When does it go away?
Yep.
Do I have to pay? Is it for my family?
Yep.
The two biggest ones that we hear a lot of questions on is HSAs, HRAs.
What does that stand for?
Health savings accounts and health reimbursement accounts.
Okay, what's the difference?
So it's something set by the IRS rules.
Got it.
It's just depending on what they cover, what they pay.
Uh-huh.
But most unions will put in money into a bucket.
Okay.
They're given basically a credit card.
Yep.
They go to the doctor, pays deductibles, pays medicine, pays whatever.
Got it.
And it's all put away. It's all in an account just for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear a lot of members, we go to seminars, we have this discussion, and people will come up to us and say, didn't even know it existed.
Right.
So do they actually have a credit card?
Yeah.
And so they don't know that they have a credit card?
No. You know how sometimes you get those cards in the mail, people shred them. They just think they're junk.
I absolutely get it.
Yeah.
So they're literally shredding $2,000.
Sometimes way more.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
$2,000
like a year.
Yeah. There's a lot of unions that have several.
And some unions have, I know with the operating engineers, we have a reimbursement. We call it the family supplemental benefit because, you know, we're big on acronyms. We all have similar programs, but we like to call them different things.
Yes.
But, you know, telling members, like, yeah, this is a $2,000 or $1,500 benefit, but it renews every single year. People are like, oh, I didn't know that, you know. So it's it behooves you to know what your benefits are. If you're a union member out there listening right now, you know, I know a lot of union members who, you know, I've got insurance, I've got a pension. I don't know how much the pension is, but when I'm ready to retire, it's going to be there. And you know, if your union is a member of the Midwest Coalition of Labor, then there's a partnership with Megan Financial. So you can pick up the phone and just find out. Like, there's no reason not to know what your benefits are, because in all likelihood, it's probably better than you think it is. So it's worth making a phone call and just figuring out what that all looks like and having a plan.
Absolutely it is. And to hit on your point, too, with the pensions, everyone does know their pensions. They get the statements.
Mm-hmm.
They
sure.
see what it is.
Sure.
But that's the bottom line. That's the top number, really. You know, so when you go to retire, and it's happening right now with a member, someone that has a specific situation, they're going to retire 90 days from now, and they are understanding how a spousal benefit is going to play into that, what the reduction is on the family's pension,
right?
And kind of understanding, like, oh, my God,
that's what it is. Now I have to, you know, the number I had in my head didn't incorporate that dollar amount. Point is, the benefit they're going to get isn't the benefit that they see. So when they go to sign that form.
So what he's talking about, for everybody that's listening that doesn't know this, is it's called a spousal benefit. It's got varied names, but basically what it is if you pass away, your spouse gets either a lump sum or gets to continue taking a piece of your pension, correct?
Correct, yeah. Okay. A joint survivor annuity form of payment.
That's right. So you're protecting her if you should pass away before she does.
Right.
Right.
That is correct.
And you have to make an election to do that.
You do.
And you can take 50%, 75%. You know, so there are dollar amounts that come into play here. And like you just said, you know, if you look at your pension statement, it says $5,000 a month. You're like, oh, I'm going to get $5,000 a month. And then you're confronted with, you know, you could take $5,000, but she has to sign off and say she gets nothing if you retire. Or you can take $4,000 and make sure that she's protected for the rest of her life.
For the rest of her life.
Yeah. Okay.
You got it.
And by the way, that's a good problem to have.
For
absolutely.
Sure. Right? I mean, yes. Like, how many people get to make that election and say, hey, I just retired, and if I pass away, I know my spouse is going to be taken care of for the rest of her life.
Not many.
That's right.
And you know, every presentation that we do at every union hall, we say one of the first things that we say is the union not only protects the member wholeheartedly,
yeah,
but they have the spouse in mind always.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then on top of that, their families.
Of course.
So not many corporations and companies do that. They focus just on the worker. These are the benefits for you.
Right. I mean, I think especially in the building trades, the jobs that construction workers do, they often have to be out there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they're working until 6 o'clock at night. And the kids have to go to school. The kids have to have breakfast, dinner. So the building trades certainly...
They don't have to.
Well, the building trades certainly, there is a spirit of... It takes a strong spouse at home to allow you to be able to work these kind of hours. So,
correct.
You know, it's something that I think is missing in corporate America, but, you know, it bears mentioning.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Know, so, Doug, you said this, and I've seen, you know, talk to tons and tons of people. You work for a company, they'll insure you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you're paying 25% of the premium, if not more. But they will only insure you, not your kids, not your spouse. So you have to pay for that on top of it.
Absolutely.
And the unions in the union world, they're insuring the whole family. If you have a family, you got family coverage. If you're single, you get single coverage. If you're single plus one, whatever, right? So they're all different mechanisms. But like you said, a union, number one, it's a family. And number two, we take care of our families.
100%.
From cradle to grave.
That's right.
And so... And, you know, and we've talked about this ad nauseum. I had a conversation with a member the other day, called me, and he was, you know, I forget, 30 years old, and he's paying, you know, $20 for, you know, $300,000 worth of life insurance. Do I really need this? You know, what do I have? Like, he had no clue what he had.
Right.
Yeah.
And I talked to him for a half hour. I'm like, oh, and you have this, and you have this. He's like, I had no idea. I'm like, I know you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hard to know, especially where, you know, like, how do you deal with this, I guess, is a question for you. You have a member, like, 399 is a perfect example. They get a job, you know, working here in this building where WGN is housed. They're not working out of the union hall, right? So they get the job here, and the benefits are provided by the union. They have to either seek those out, or the union has to communicate with them.
Correct.
Right? There's a lot of times where in union land, you know, it's like our police members, right? They go and work for a municipality, and most of the benefits are through the municipality, if not all the benefits are through the municipality. So they have to figure out what those benefits are as well.
Right.
You know, they can call you, right? And you can literally say, okay, here are your benefits, and here are the nuances of, you know, your pension, your disability, et cetera. It's not just in building trades land. It could be any employer.
Any employer.
And
anywhere.
And any union.
Any union.
So let's pivot back to what we talked about at the start of this, and that is, you sit in a kitchen table with a union member, but that union member may have a spouse that works in a non-union setting, for example.
Sure.
So how does that play into the equation?
It's much different. So there's other fringe benefits that non-union worker has, someone that has an employer that doesn't collectively bargain for them.
Right.
They're going to have group plans as well, but the onus is on them, not like the union member that we talked about.
Right.
Their job is to pay dues, go to work. They have wonderful benefits. The non-union side, and I made the example, you know, some spouse may work at Jewel.
Yeah.
And then they have group plans, giant company. And they do have health insurance, but again, like you made mention of, it's complicated. Sure. You might have to have a high deductible right. plan, or you might have to pay more for a PPO, depending on what you want.
Right.
You get married, and that's more. You have kids, that's more.
Yep.
Life insurance might be an option.
Yep.
401ks, if you have a 401k, which are amazing,
yep.
they usually offer matches, so they should be taking advantage of those
yeah,
things.
No matter what,
for sure.
But what they have to know, too, is there is money put aside for a union member. We're putting X amount of dollars every hour you work. That's going away. On the non-union side, non-collectively bargained, they have to make an election. So now, it's important.
Back up. You didn't say that's going away like it's going someplace. You mean that's going away for you.
Yeah, it's being held aside for you.
It's being held aside for you. Yeah, yes. Correct. No, that's,
you just had a million people.
No, it's going away out of your check. No.
Way to go, Doug.
Yeah.
All right. So,
spreading rumors.
Yeah. So keep going now. So now the non-union spouse, for example.
Non-union spouse. They may ask, I make X amount of dollars. How much do I have to put aside? On the other side, on the union side, it's already picked.
Right. Mm-hmm.
On her side, it's what do I do?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do I invest it in? There's no one there. So it's a little bit more different. And then, you know, they do offer certain other things, you know, possibly some tuition assistance and some short-term disability with all unions. They mm-hmm. offer that as well. But
right.
Ed and I were saying before, the short-term disability, which we discussed, is actually more important than, I mean, it's as important as life insurance.
Yeah, you're more likely to use it in your lifetime, of course, than life insurance.
Yes.
Well, you will use life insurance once.
Somebody will.
Well, you may not. You leave your job, that life insurance is probably going away.
Not for the MCL.
Yeah, not actually, for the MCL. We're talking about the non-collective bargaining.
It makes sense. And actually, funny you should say that, and just a quick mention, the MCL, this coming summer or early fall, will be rolling out a short-term disability program.
Excellent.
And leveraging our economies of scale to make it utterly dirt cheap.
That's amazing.
So some unions, like you said, have it. Some don't. Some employers have it. Some don't. But we're going to roll that out this summer.
We got to spread the word.
Yeah, because people need that. But so you make a good point, and I want to just make this clear for anybody that's listening. Two things. One is, if you're an MCL member, you can simply pick up the phone and call Megan Financial.
Right? That's right.
And you know, and if you're not, can they call you anyway? I mean, union members call you and say, like, hey, I have a question. You'll still talk to them.
Absolutely. We'll talk to anybody.
Yeah, they just won't get the same discount that the MCL gets.
That's correct.
Okay, I gotcha.
We've been getting a lot of phone calls from our radio, from our commercials.
Sure.
For a lot of teachers with the TRS pension, because their pension has been changing. They've been offering two options that are very confusing. They said they heard us on this radio show.
Sure. I've gotten a ton of calls myself and saying, like, hey, you know, I heard you guys have free college. And I'm like, what union are you with? Like, ask me. Like, yeah, not for you.
Yet.
I'm joking.
You better start working on it.
Yeah.
Got to work.
But, you know, so you're right. So the show is working in that regard.
Yes.
Obviously, it would behoove everybody to come together and leverage our economies of scale and join, right, so we can do this.
Yes.
But the nice thing I think about, Megan, to be blunt with you, why we went with you, and actually we're expanding your territory now into the entire MCL world, which
Love
is
it.
Yeah, 11 states and, you know, bordering on a quarter million members, is that you guys actually care, and you'll talk to people on the phone and same. Like, I made the joke, but I'll talk to anybody, you know. And
yeah,
I've had a teacher call me and say, hey, my son, you know, the building trade sounds like a great fit for him, and I would just put him in touch with whoever they need to get put in touch with. So, you know, we make a lot of jokes, but in all actuality, if you really need something or want something, you know, the world is your oyster. You can call
Absolutely.
Us and we will help, because we actually believe in this. And I think that's you know, I think you guys do as well. And that's why you're in the union space.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And if I were in a union space.
Yeah, look, we appreciate everything that you guys do. I have not heard a single, not one complaint about Megan Financial.
That's amazing. That's great news.
I'm serious about that.
We strive for that, man. I mean, our reputation is high because of it, and we work very hard for that.
You guys,
thank you.
You guys answer the phones, and so where can people reach you?
They can call us at our main number.
Okay, which is
708-444-1090.
Say that one more time.
708-444-1090.
Where can they see you on the internet?
They can go to megent.com. MEGENT.com.
Okay, thank you so much. You've been listening to Doug Klima he's the managing director of Megan Financial, right here on 720 WGN. The Workers' Mic. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on WGN. You know, we've only got a few minutes left in the show. It's been a good show. Thanks for staying with us, as you do every week. Ken, we need a solution to the strike.
So I do have the solution to the strike, and it is one piece of the strike, but quite frankly, I think it's the most important piece of the strike. There's a couple elements of the strike we talked about. You know, money, obviously, right? And money is money. You can resolve that by withholding your labor, working conditions, but most importantly, in my humble opinion, which is AI, right? Artificial intelligence performing the work of these writers. So this is what I came up with. And I don't know if you saw this movie, and I don't remember the name of the movie, but it's like some people, I don't even know if I saw it, but they're sitting at a dinner table and some guy's wearing, like, you know, scrubs and from like a doctor's office. And some other guy says, like, what are you wearing? Like, what's that outfit? He's like, oh, these are, you know, my OR scrubs. And the guy says, oh, are they? And like, that's funny. And how could that be written by a computer?
Well, AI is not funny.
Correct. So my theory is simply this. And now I'm talking to you, the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, and I'm talking to you, IATSE, and I'm talking to you, the Directors Guild, and I'm talking to you, anybody that is tangentially or in any way, shape, or form involved with making of entertainment. And it's simply this. Put a line in your contract that says, we will, let's say you're an actor, we will not recite a single line written by AI.
Yeah.
And if you're a Directors Guild, we will not direct anything written by AI. And if you're IATSE, we will not perform work on any project that is in any way, shape, or form written by AI.
Right.
If all the big unions and the stars of the world and Will Ferrell and Tom Cruise say, I'm not going to say a single line written by AI ever,
right,
and then SAG-AFTRA and all the other unions do that, I think that ends the discussion about AI, and I think that they have the muscle to do that. So I have just resolved the strike
AI part
for everybody, and you're welcome.
Free of charge, no less.
Yeah, free of charge.
You're a generous guy, Ken.
I should be a consultant. I actually, but I'm not kidding, I actually sent this email to the guy from SAG-AFTRA, Eric, last night. I'm like, I have an idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's probably laughing because he's like, wow, can you think you're the first to think of that?
Well, I mean, the studios can use AI to replace a writer, they think. Can they use AI to replace an actor? No. Can they use AI to replace a director? No. Can they use AI to replace people who do lighting and costumes and all that? No. And that's where this solidarity comes. You know, people who have the luxury of not being threatened by this have to stand up for the people that are being threatened by
it. That's absolutely correct. So I think... I think on that note, right,
we're about out of time, Jan.
Are we out of time?
We are out of time.
We need a longer show, by the way.
I agree. Check us out on YouTube if you missed any of the show. Look up Workers' Mic on YouTube.
Yeah.
Thank you to the Da Vinci Street Productions, and we will be back with you next week.
Right here on 720 WGN.